From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. Yes, 1 o'clock has rolled around once again on this beautiful January 15th, 2014. It's always a beautiful day if you're alive and living, right? Hope you all are having a great week so far on this hump day. We have a stacked show for you all. In just a sec, I'll be talking with a man who has found himself here at MSU after previously having one pretty special college football career at Virginia Tech, also played in the pros, Corey Moore. Yes, Corey Moore will be joining me in just a second. Later on in the hour, we will also be chatting with USA Today NFL columnist Jarrett Bell about the hiring of Jim Caldwell with the Lions, and to get his thoughts on the NFL playoffs so far. And we have so much to talk about. And on today's Barbershop Wednesday, we want to encourage you all to call in. You know the number. 517-355-9527, and we are really going to be diving into when is it okay, folks, to storm a college basketball court after a win? I want to know, because you know what? If you tuned in last night and you watched Indiana with a huge victory over Wisconsin, and the students rush the court, immediately I go on Twitter, because that's what I do. I go on Twitter after huge moments like that. I'm on Twitter all the time. I don't care if a game is on or not. But I go on Twitter, and I see so many of my followers and the folks that I'm following in outrage that the Indiana students rushed the court after that win, considering the history, if you will, that Indiana basketball has had. Folks, are we forgetting that these are college students and that, hey, many of them probably won't even get the chance to storm a court? So, I don't know. I have a different take on it, but many of you really, really voiced your opinion on Twitter. So, we're asking you to voice it on Current Sports today. Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. When is it okay to storm a college basketball court after a win? You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And just to kind of kill off the discussion and get you guys thinking to call in here, on our Facebook page, Eddie, I want to shout out Eddie, who has made a comment on our Facebook page. Eddie says that, quote, "I don't think it's okay to rush the court in college unless it's like a national title, since that's kind of a big deal. The rules they are adding to make it safer, yes, I understand that keeping them safe is important, but they understand that there is a certain risk. But they need to stop it before sports like football become a glorified pillow fight." Interesting comment there, Eddie. All right, that's Eddie. He has decided to comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com on this. But again, when is it okay to rush a college basketball court? Okay, I have an interesting opinion on it. It's our Barbershop Wednesday topic. We will definitely be diving into that later on in the show. Also want to encourage you all and remind you all that it is Wednesday, and you know, every Wednesday night it's a party at WKAR. Well, not really, but sort of. We tape Current Sports TV, folks, each and every Wednesday at 6 p.m. You can be a part of the live studio audience by signing up for free on our website, WKAR.org. I'll be sitting down with MSU football royalty, Robert Viney. He's also been on the radio show a few weeks back. Robert Viney, of course, was a lineman for the MSU football team back in the 1960s, played alongside the legendary, the man, the myth, the legend, Bubba Smith. Robert is such a great guy, an animated character, to say the least, and you can catch my sit-down with him and be a part of the live studio audience in that taping by just signing up online at WKAR.org and showing up at the Communication Arts and Sciences building here on MSU's campus. Look forward to seeing your smiling faces later on this evening. All right, well, let's kick this show off, baby. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit headliners for this January 15, 2014. All right, we'll remind you all that Michigan State puts its undefeated road record on the line as it travels to Northwestern. The Spartans will face a Wildcat team coming off its first Big Ten win of the season, having defeated a ranked Illinois squad on Sunday. Now, MSU and NU will meet twice this season after playing just once in the last 2 years. Now, tip-off is at 7 p.m. in Evanston, Illinois. That should be a good one there. Last night, University of Michigan was in action. Sophomore Nick Stauskas, he was great last night. He stuffed the stat sheet with 21 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists as the University of Michigan men's basketball team defeated Penn State 80-67 Tuesday night inside Chrysler Center. Now, UM, they led wire-to-wire in the win, which is the Wolverines' 6th straight, and improved their record to 4-0 in Big Ten play. That actually ties MSU. So now MSU and Michigan are both tied at 4-0 conference play in the Big Ten. Now, Stauskas was one of 4 Wolverines to score in double figures, as Derek Walton Jr. had 16, Glenn Robinson III had 15, John Horford, he chipped in with 11 to go along with his game-high 7 rebounds. So U of M gets that win there. Again, Wisconsin, they suffered their first loss of the season against Indiana last night. Yogi Ferrell had 25 points for the Hoosiers, while Wisconsin's Trayvon Jackson had 21. Now, up to this game, Wisconsin was undefeated and won its last 16 games. Indiana lost 2 of its last 3. And it was certainly one incredible game. Again, the fans rushed the court. It's a huge win. If you're going to argue the history aspect of this, and they should only, you know, storm the court in big wins, this was a pretty big win for Indiana, topping Wisconsin for the first time in a long time. Definitely want to hear your thoughts on that as we kick off our Barbershop Wednesday segment later on. But there was one game that had everyone talking.
Young will try another triple. Got it! James Young, 23 points. Final 7 seconds.
Got to drive it, Brad. You got to drive it.
Madden. For maybe the win. The follow is good. The follow is good. Arkansas in overtime.
What a game last night. That was Michael Qualls, who slammed home a thundering two-hand rebound dunk with 0.2 seconds remaining in OT to send Arkansas to a 87-85 victory over number 13 Kentucky last night. Now, the win came at a time of desperation for the Razorbacks, who had opened SEC play with 2 losses, including a heartbreaking overtime defeat to number 7 Florida on Saturday at home. And it came, again, in dramatic fashion, folks, thanks to the high-flying Qualls, who said he also won 2 games in high school with last-second rebound dunks. So he's done this before. I guess it's just in his instincts. And it was a heads-up play that really had John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats in a salty mood, if you will. Feeling some type of way, if you will. All right. All right, Red Wing news here. In his 4th Winter Olympic appearance, Red Wing star center, Pavel Datsyuk, was named captain of Team Russia, the Team Russia Olympic team. Now, it's his 4th appearance at the age of 35, and he joins fellow Red Wing Henrik Zetterberg as another wing to become captain of an Olympic team. Zetterberg was captain of Sweden last week. All right, the NFL settlement denied approval, folks. A federal judge denied the preliminary settlement of $765 million from the NFL against concussions. The primary reasoning is that the judge says the impact of concussions is more money. Now, U.S. Judge Anita Brody said, quote, "I am primarily concerned that not all retired NFL football players who ultimately receive a qualifying diagnosis for their families will be paid." So again, even though it's denied by Anita Brody, U.S. Judge Anita Brody, this does not mean that this will eventually get approved for those who have been hurt over the years when it comes to concussions in the NFL and its knowledge or lack of knowledge, if you will, in handling the situation. So it's denied now, but I do not foresee that in the future. Serena Williams, she advanced to the 3rd round of the Australian Open by defeating Vesna Dolunk in straight sets and earned a milestone along the way. The victory moved her Aussie Open record to 60-8. 60-8, folks, tying the all-time mark held by Margaret Court, who won a whopping 11 Australian Open titles. Yes, she is definitely Miss Australian Open. Margaret Court was such an incredible player. But yes, now Serena Williams earns her 60th victory. Quite a milestone for Serena. All right, for the 2nd consecutive year, the NBA champion Miami Heat paid a visit to President Obama and the White House. Obama congratulated the club on their accomplishments and included a few joking remarks about his hometown Chicago Bulls.
They won 27 games straight the second longest winning streak ever. Extraordinarily impressive, almost as impressive as the Bulls' 72 win season. Outstanding athletes, outstanding organization, outstanding team, but also outstanding members of their community. And so we're very proud to have them back. We wish them great luck for the rest of the season, unless they're playing the Bulls. And with that, I think we should take a picture, but we should make it quick before one of these guys starts yelling at Mario.
I love the sense of humor that President Obama has. That is hilarious stuff. Again, the Heat visiting the White House. Of course, they're coming off that championship from last season. Now, the Commander-in-Chief also thanked members of the Heat for contributing to First Lady Michelle Obama's anti-obesity Let's Move campaign. Great stuff there. All right. You know, we talked about yesterday the new mascot for the Chicago Cubs, Clark the Cub. I love it. I'm glad that the Chicago Cubs now have a mascot. But there are many out there that, you know, feel differently. Now, the Chicago Cubs' new mascot hasn't exactly gotten a warm reception from baseball fans across the country. Clark, described by the organization as, quote, strictly for kids and family entertainment, I think all mascots are, but he has begun a torn apart on social media and other sports websites, including Photoshop contests that highlighted Clark's lack of clothing from the waist down. Now, though the Cubs expected the negative reaction from some, they are sticking by their new addition, saying, quote, we've been around for 100 years, and we plan on being around for another 100 years. As we look to develop the next generation of fans, the mascot will help that. Plus, there were a lot of fans today excited to share the experience with Clark the mascot. That was from Julian Green, Vice President of Communications and Community Affairs on Clark the Club. Clark the Cub, excuse me, that's a tongue twister right there. Clark the Cub, the newest mascot for the Chicago Cubs. So there you have that. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527. And share what's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. And again, folks, our Barbershop Wednesday topic is specifically dealing with fans that rush the court. What are your thoughts on it? We definitely want to get your thoughts on it because last night you saw a huge win. Indiana tops Wisconsin, and fans immediately rush the court. It's Indiana's first win over the Badgers in quite some time. And, you know, I personally didn't have a problem with it. When it comes to rushing the court, you got to understand. And I took a lot of backlash from this because I on my Twitter account said, hey, I didn't see what the problem was. But there are many out there who think that there are only certain huge moments, I guess bigger than the Indiana win over Wisconsin last night, where fans, college students, should rush the court. I feel otherwise. You got to keep in mind, my opinion on this is that they're students and they're just having fun. Sports is about fun. What's the problem with it? But again, I mean, other people feel otherwise. They feel as maybe it's a safety hazard. I've heard many, many arguments about it. But again, that's our Barbershop Wednesday topic. We're going to dive into it in just a sec. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Aaron, let's hit the break. When we come back, we're going to kick off Barbershop Wednesday and dive into this topic. I'm definitely excited about it. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, writer Susan Orlean on seeing the pandas at Washington's National Zoo, including through the panda cam.
Here we have the most high-tech setup, dozens of people in the room, observers logging all of their movements, and everybody was just transfixed.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm WKAR's Emmanuel Berry, host of Current State Weekend. Spend your weekends with me as I highlight Current State's weekday stories and explore Mid-Michigan's vibrant arts and culture scene. We'll cover from the latest at Wharton Center to community events. Tune in Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Sundays at noon for WKAR's Current State Weekend.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, I want to remind you all that tonight's the night, each and every Wednesday night at 6 p.m., we record our Current Sports TV series. And tonight I will be sitting down with Robert Viney. He is an MSU lineman in the 1960s. If you want to be a part of that audience, that live studio audience, sign up at WKAR.org and show up. We are on the first floor of the Communication Arts and Sciences building on the campus of Michigan State University. Look forward to seeing your smiling faces, all right? I love Wednesdays, love Wednesdays. Okay, well, Barbershop Wednesday, folks. I love Barbershop Wednesday as well because it's time we get to debate and go at it. You know, it's called Barbershop Wednesday because every time you go into the barbershop, there's always a debate going on. I just got a fresh cut the other day and walked into the barbershop, and immediately people are still having this argument about the whole LeBron James and Kobe Bryant discussion. They argue about that every time I go in the barbershop nowadays. But there's always a debate going on, always a debate going on. And one of those hot debates that took place last night that everyone is talking about is concerning the Indiana and the Wisconsin game, which I got extremely lucky, guys. I called that game, Indiana topping Wisconsin. First time Indiana's beat Wisconsin in, whew, I think like 2003, 2004, something like that. It's been quite a long time. But I tell you, guys, what really took a lot of heat in this game had to, you know, the students did. And the students, the reason why they're taking a lot of heat is because they rushed the court after that win. And there are many out there, and like as I said previously, when I got up on Twitter, Twitter was blowing up saying, how could Indiana, of all schools, get that excited over this win, and why are the students rushing the court? Guys, as we dive into this, I'll give you my thoughts on it really quick to kick it off. I see no problem with students rushing the court at all whatsoever. And you know what? Specifically, when you look at last night's game, you talk about students. Look, trying to compare my age with them now. I graduated college in 2012. Most of those students are born around 1994, 1995-ish. Now, when you talk about history, this is the argument that gets made all the time when you talk about students rushing to court. The history that Indiana basketball has is very, very, very rich. No doubt about it. I mean, Indiana lore when it comes to college basketball is very rich in tradition. And when you look at it, they are definitely among, you know, some of the top programs when you talk about, you know, college basketball history and what they have accomplished. And that's the problem that a lot of sports writers and a lot of people in general had when they saw the students rushing the court, because they're saying, hey, you're Indiana. What are you doing rushing the court acting like this is just some this is a huge monumental moment for you? When you talk about this is the part that I think gets forgotten. The student aspect to this. These are students. These are, you know, kids who come to the games and want to go wild, want to go crazy, and have fun. People are forgetting that sports are about having fun. And, you know, in my opinion, I thought this was a pretty big game that you could allow students to rush the court because you haven't beat Wisconsin in so long and you do it last night. Why not celebrate a little, have some fun on the court? These are students. No. And like I said, the point alluding to this, a lot of these students are born in 1995. Many of them probably don't even know or have an inkling about the history or lore that Indiana basketball has, nor do they probably care. You know what I mean? I mean, when that happens and you see some of your friends going to court, why not? It's about fun. And I think that's the tradition that's being lost in this, that I feel, you know, students in the school should be taking a lot of flack for it. I'm going to start the conversation with that and get your guys' opinion, starting with that.
All right, Al, I'll step up next. And I agree with you. The kids are young, and even if they are aware of the history of the Indiana basketball program, they certainly didn't really live through any of it.
Exactly.
You know, they weren't around for it, or certainly weren't, you know, cognizant and, you know, big sports fans. And if they were, they were like, what, seven?
I mean, they're little babies.
Indiana went to the Final Four in 2002 with Mike Davis, but, you know, that was a blip. And then they had the down years after Kelvin Sampson. Like, that program has been through a lot in the last 10 years. My thinking on rushing the court in general is that it's fine with some asterisks.
Mm-hmm. What are those asterisks?
I agree that you can rush the court if you are beating a top five team. Totally okay. If you're beating a nobody, what are you doing? I mean, people don't do that anyway. If you're beating a top five team and your team is unranked, you deserve to rush the court. Michigan State rushed the court when they beat number one ranked Wisconsin back in 2007. Mm-hmm. It happens even here, even in the thick of the Izzo era, you know, when, you know, Michigan State is at the top of college basketball. Still, when you have a moment like that, when you beat a nationally, you know, revered team on your home floor. Yeah, they got to be top five. Mm. You can't just go and, oh, yeah, we beat the number 13 team at home. Nobody cares.
So do you agree with Indiana rushing the court last
night?
Yes,
absolutely. Wisconsin's number three in the country. They're undefeated.
Right.
It's their first loss of the season.
Right.
It's huge in the Big Ten title race, not for Indiana so much, but for the other teams, because Wisconsin has such a favorable schedule. But, you know, when you get a win of this magnitude, especially for Indiana, who's struggled this year, they needed something to kind of, you know, turn the tide of their season. That's a big win. I think they have more than enough reason to rush the court. I see no problem with it, no matter what their history as a program is.
Right, exactly. I agree. Alex?
Yeah, first of all, congrats on your first Big Ten college basketball pick, Al. Great job.
Hey, I'm probably leading the standings now, baby. I'm feeling good.
One game. Second, about storming the court, I actually kind of disagree. I think that if it's a historic rivalry, even if it's a team that's not ranked in the top five, or even if it's not a Big Ten game, look at the Army Navy series. I mean, there's a year I think Navy won every single year in the 80s for like seven straight years or something like that. I don't know exactly what it was, but I think that in that case, sure, with that historic rivalry and the fact that Navy was dominating, I think Army definitely should rush the field. And this is football. And that's a whole other conversation with football rushing the field when that is right or wrong. But with basketball,
I feel the same way with football as I do basketball.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I don't know, because I feel like football, it's a little bit harder to do. I feel like security is a little bit more beefed at football games.
I tell you what, I covered the MSU Michigan game when it was at the Big House, and Michigan won on the last second field goal, of course, and the fans rushed the entire field. It was one of the most chaotic events I have ever seen in my life.
That's a little ridiculous.
Yeah, that was – I mean, well, it kind of alludes to Alex's point here, because you talk about a big rivalry, Michigan and Michigan State, with that, you know, the huge rivalry, and the way in which they won it really amplified that moment. But to be honest with you, I saw no problem with the students rushing the field on that one either. I mean, you just beat one of your biggest rivals, no matter how hard they try to admit that or not. But you just beat one of your biggest rivals in that type of fashion.
Right.
I see no problem with it. The kids are having fun.
See, but my
problem. It was hectic for me trying to do a stand-up.
My problem with that is, you know, that year, Michigan State was an average team.
Mm-hmm.
They had already lost games. They weren't a nationally relevant team. I get that it is a fierce rivalry.
And the way in which
it ended.
And
that's fine.
Yeah.
And sure, yeah. But, you know, this is Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are supposed to be the big brother. So what are they doing rushing the field when they beat their little brother 12-10?
Yeah, this is the thing. They try to play that facade.
Right.
You know,
but you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, exactly. They try, like I said, man, they try to play that facade like, oh, okay, yeah, we're Michigan. We're supposed to win against Michigan State. But, I mean, in those moments, as a student and as a fan watching that game, you know what I mean? Hey.
Right.
I saw no. It was, like I said, it was a problem for me trying to do a stand-up when I got screaming fans in back of me looking at the camera. It was pretty hilarious. I still got the moment of that on camera. Hilarious stuff. But, no, I mean, going back to the point, though, when you talk about, for me, I try to go rewind time to back when I was a student, and I was a part of the Izzone before I started covering games. When I was I had season tickets my freshman year. And as a student, I mean, and seeing the success of the program at Michigan State has, and seeing Izzo out there is my first time seeing Tom Izzo, a guy who I've been watching on my TV screen for years up until the point I became a student at MSU. I mean, you become a fan. You know what I mean? The essence of college hoops and college sports in general is unlike any essence in any other sporting realm. So when you have a moment like last night, I have to disagree with you on this. I don't think it has to be even a top five. You know, if you're unranked or if you are ranked but you're like in the lower tier maybe and you do beat a top five team, Okay, rush the court. I have no problem with that. But I don't think you have to be ranked even to rush the court at all. You're just having fun. I think that's the essence of being forgotten.
So you're just going to have them rush the court at any win? Because that's what you're saying.
If they want to. If they want to, man. This is college sports, man.
See, that's getting ridiculous.
This
though.
Is college sports, though, man. These are kids that are just having fun. If they want to rush the court after beating an unranked, no Joe Schmo team, let them rush the court. They're kids. Let them have some fun.
So let's say Indiana, you know, hypothetically, they play Northwestern.
Yeah.
And they beat them. Are they rushing the court?
If they do, I have no problem with it.
You have no problem with it.
I have no problem at all with it, man.
That is
no
ridiculous.
Because they're in college having fun. Let them have some fun,
They're
man.
Supposed to beat Northwestern.
Yeah, but like I said, the students and fans don't care about that.
They should.
They don't, though. At the end of the day, they're having fun. They're with their friends. They may be, you know, liquored up a little bit. They're having fun out there. Let them go nuts for a little bit. It's college, baby.
I think we should check in with someone who actually was on the field during some of those rushes.
Oh, we definitely will. He just walked in the building, too. In just a moment, you will get a chance to hear Corey Moore. If you don't know who Corey Moore is, you will definitely find out in just a sec. Aaron, let's hit the break really quick. When we come back, we'll be chatting with him. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back.
While the U.S. Congress is divided and gridlocked, some states have become political monopolies where one party controls both the state legislature and the governor's office, enabling that party to push through its political agenda. On the next Fresh Air, how funding from special interest groups is making this possible. We talk with Nicholas Confessori of the New York Times. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Let's get to our first guest on today's show. Corey Moore was an outstanding football player, ladies and gents. He played college football for Virginia Tech, earned All-American honors, was recognized as one outstanding college defensive player, went on to become a third-round pick in the 2000 NFL Draft, playing professionally for the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins. Guess what, folks? Life has now placed him right here on the campus of Michigan State University as an academic advisor. Let's just travel back in time real quick.
Welcome to the Terror Dome, baby. We swamp. Welcome to the Terror Dome.
We swamp. Let them know.
We swamp, baby. We swamp, baby. All day long.
Yes. How can you forget that moment? Corey Moore, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Corey?
I'm good. Thank you.
Do you remember that moment?
I do. That was a Thursday night game against Clemson.
Yeah. What goes through your head when you hear that bite? excitement, right?
Pretty much. That was a very fun time. Period in my life. I moved on, but it's always good to kind of relive some of that.
Corey, before I dive into the logistics here, just briefly hitting on our Barbershop Wednesday technique. What is your thoughts on fans rushing the field or court? What are your thoughts on it?
Well. I listened in on your discussion earlier, and I have to say, I agree with you. I think, college students, are enjoying the moment. I'm an avid sports fan. I get excited. So I don't have a problem with it, Even if it's a team, that their school is expected to beat, live in the moment. Enjoy it. So I don't have a problem with it.
Were you ever involved in any fans rushing the field while you were playing?
Definitely. My senior year, we went undefeated in regular season and then lost in the national championship to Florida State. But our final game, which was the game to decide if we were going to play for the national championship, Virginia Tech officials and – tried to stop our fans from rushing the field. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, okay, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Right.
I expect them to rush the field, So they were throwing, like, sugar cubes because that's where the national championship was. It was the Sugar Bowl that year. And I expect it.
You expect it. Yeah. I feel you on that, man. All right, Corey, now you have quite the resume. During college, following the 1999 season, you became Virginia Tech's most honored football player. senior defensive end. You earn the Bronco Narguski Award as College Football's Defensive Player of the Year. Also won the Lombardi Award as College Football Lineman of the Year, and was named Football News Defensive Player of the Year. Became just the second Virginia Tech player to be recognized as unanimous first-team All-American. I mean, I could go on and on here, Corey. Now, you also had 31 sacks during your final two college seasons. I mean, Corey, when I rattle off all of that, what goes through your head, man?
To me, all of those accomplishments don't mean anything to me, because it just, what goes through my head is like the sense of pride of being part of the Virginia Tech family and the program there. And that's what I'm proud of. I think we've established ourselves and our program on the national level. And I like to see us get back more prominently. I think the past couple seasons that we've been down a little bit. But the thing about our program at Virginia Tech, we've been consistent. And consistent with the coaching staff, Beamer, and most of the staff that was there, that helped us start the program and establish some national prominence in the 90s, is still there. And so for me, I take pride in knowing that I played with a good group of guys that worked just as hard as I did. And for me, my former teammates, my coaches will tell you, I was never one that got caught up in personal accomplishment. To me, it was all about the team. And so, you know, personal recognition and stuff like that, it's good. But I feel a sense of pride in knowing that I played with a good group of guys.
Corey, what's your relationship now with Virginia Tech? Do you still go back there and talk to the guys? What's that bond like now for you?
Definitely. I still stay in contact with the coach that recruited me. I stay in contact with Bud Foster, who's the defensive coordinator, Coach Beamer, and I, his son, who I played with, is currently on the staff as well. So I have a good relationship with the program. And that's one thing about it. It's a family atmosphere. You know, I try to get back to at least one or two games a season. Get back for spring, for the spring game and stuff like right. that. So, you know, I'm constantly there.
Now, Corey, for you were selected in the third round by the Buffalo Bills in 2000, released and then signed a 2-year contract with the Dolphins. What was your NFL career like, and what led to you leaving the game?
It was different. You know, playing professionally, it's a business, so it kind of takes the fun out of it a little bit. And for me, that's what I remember about it. You know, it was still fun, but it was business. You never know, you know, what the next month, the next, you know, season was going to hold in regards to the younger guys coming in and mm-hmm. what direction the team was going to go. And I experienced that. And then when I got hurt, you know, it was just like, you know, well, if you can't stay on the practice field, then we'll get someone else to come in. And that's what you see a lot. You see once a guy, you know, has established himself, been in the league 5 or 6 years, well, they demand a higher salary. And right. you see, you know, the organization make a decision, well, we'll pay this rookie a lower salary to do the job that, you know, this guy can do. So you see a lot of that. But it was fun. For me, I never anticipated having an opportunity to play professionally. So for me, it was fun, and I was, you know, blessed to have that opportunity.
Corey, how and when did you get hurt?
The 2001 season. I broke my ankle, and then rehabbing, I tore my ACL and MCL.
Oh, my goodness, man. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Corey Moore, former NFL player and also he was an outstanding player at Virginia Tech. Corey, I mean, what do you miss the most about the game and playing?
Oh, let's see. Well, I can't say that I miss playing, because I'm a lot older now. My body can't hold up, but right. I do miss the atmosphere, the competitiveness, the camaraderie, you know, the family environment, particularly on a college level, because professional level is definitely totally different. As I said, it's a business, but you know, the collegiate environment. I mean, you develop bonds and relationships that are going to last you a lifetime, and that's what I take away from it. And I miss, you know, I moved on professionally in my life, and I'm, you know, obviously a long, long way from Virginia, so I miss, you know, the everyday, you know, connection that I have with, you know, some of my teammates and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. When was the moment for you that you knew that you had to hang up the jersey, and how difficult? Because I know everybody goes through different stages. We had Otis Wiley on here, and he talked about, you know, when he got injured and had to come to grips with the fact that, you know, my NFL dream is now done now. I mean, how hard was that for you, and when was that moment? When did it hit you?
I would say probably in 2003 for me. And it wasn't that difficult for me, because one of the things that I always prided myself in, I was involved in a lot of different things when I was an undergraduate in college. I mean, I was involved in fraternity life and student government.
You're a Q, right?
I am.
I'm an alpha.
Okay.
Oh, six, baby.
I won't hold that against you. but I was involved in a lot of different things. I actually did some radio, sports talk radio type stuff. I did a lot of after school, you know, mentoring and tutoring with kids and youth and stuff like that. So one of the things I always prided myself in is not letting football define me and define who I was. And so I always like to say I was a different type of student athlete. Mm-hmm. I prided myself of being involved in the community and being involved in different things. So when it came time for me to walk away from it, the hardest part for me was deciding what route I was going to go. You know, what did I want to do?
You were doing so many different things.
Right, right. And so that was the difficult part for me. And I tried my hand at a couple of different things. And so now it's kind of led me to, you know, academic affairs and, you know, student affairs at the college administration level. And I don't know how much longer I do this, because I'll be honest with you, I do miss, you know, collegiate athletics. And so I've had, you know, opportunities to, you know, as a coach, but I don't see myself as a coach. And, you know, I could see myself as a college administrator. And so I've talked to some of my mentors about, you know, what would be the next phase and the next step in that regard.
How'd you end up specifically here at MSU?
Well, I was applying for graduate programs, and at the time I was actually working at Ohio State. And so I applied to graduate program at Indiana University, Bowling Green, and Michigan State. And I came up here in February of 2006, and it was cold. Oh, my God, it was cold.
I can imagine.
I'm a Southern boy, and so I wasn't used to the cold temperatures. And that almost put Michigan State out of the game for me.
Right.
But I met with, you know, some of the faculty in the grad program that I was in, that I had applied to and been admitted to, and talked to some of the students, and I just felt like it was a good fit for me, despite the weather. So that's how I kind of ended up here. My plan was only to be here, finish my grad program, and then relocate back to the South, but they won't let me leave now.
So. They won't let you leave. You're sticking right here, Corey.
So,
you know, it's funny you bring up the weather, Corey, because that's something that's so interesting, especially when you look at this past weekend, well, the weekend before last weekend, excuse me, in NFL, and there were a lot of games happening in cold environments. Now, you are a guy, like you said, you're a Southern boy. How often did you play in cold weather, and how big of a factor is weather when you talk about out there on the field?
It plays a big factor. It plays a big factor. Not only on the elements of the game, but on you psychologically. I know for me, I was one that never wore long sleeves and I never wore gloves. And so when it's cold and frigid and you smash your fingers up, I know for me, I would tell my coaches, okay, I don't want to play anymore. Like my hands are bruised up, battered. I don't want to play anymore.
Right.
And that's just kind of, you know, you have to block that out mentally. But it plays a big part. And I never like playing in cold weather. And in Virginia, it would get cold towards the end of November.
Like how cold in Virginia is it getting?
It gets
what, 60?
No. In Blacksburg, we got, I mean, you know, the full four seasons. So, I mean, we had the full weather. We get a little snow in Virginia, too. But it plays a big part. I like playing in the rain, the sloppiness. I like that. But the cold weather, no.
Favorite memory while playing at Virginia Tech?
Wow.
It's a lot of them.
I mean, that Thursday night game from the clip you played brought back some good memories. That was, I think that was probably our springboard to, you know, of our season that year and gaining some national recognition. And I think people start to take us serious after that game as a real national contender. So that was a memorable moment. Gosh, I can think of so many Vic moments. I mean, just playing with him. I mean, he was a highlight film within itself. I remember just standing on the sideline. And before he played quarterback for us, I would never watch our offense play.
Really? You all just focused on your job and what you had to do.
I was only focused on the defense and what we needed to do. I would always take a seat on the bench and regroup before we, you know, go back out on the field. But when he took over as starting quarterback for us, I couldn't wait to get to the sideline to see what he was going to do.
Unbelievable, man. Now, did you ever think that or fathom that Vic was going to turn out to be the quarterback that he became in the NFL?
I did. I mean, I played with his older cousin who was a couple years older than me. And even when Vic was in high school, his cousin always bragged about how good he was. And I remember watching him play as a high school senior, and I thought no chance he was going to come to Virginia Tech, because Syracuse at the time, who had Donovan McNabb, was recruiting him big time, and so the rumor was that, you know, he was going to go to, you know, Syracuse and, you know, take over for McNabb when McNabb graduated. Paul Pasqualini, I think, was the head coach of Syracuse at the time, and they had put on a full court press to, you know, to recruit Vic and try to swing his mom to allow him to go upstate New York and stuff like that.
Right.
And so I remember our coaches knowing that, you know, we said, okay, we've got to keep him in state. And I remember going to watch him play in high school and just blown away by his speed and his arm strength. It just, I mean, it looked like he just threw the ball on a rope, and he was so much faster than everybody else. And so, when he came to Kent with us his freshman year, we were thinking, and we had a senior quarterback in our own, Al Clark, who was a pretty good quarterback. But I remember the defensive guys particularly thinking, we've got to get him on the field somehow. But Coach Beamer had made a promise to his high school coach and to his mom that they were going to redshirt him or whatnot. Right. And I think that was good for him, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Doesn't surprise me at all.
Are you still in touch with Vic at all?
Definitely. He's one of my close friends.
Is he?
Yes.
Wow, that's great. How is he dealing with the whole Nick Foles situation? Because I know it looks like he's the guy now.
Well,
Nick Foles is
definitely
the guy over there.
Nick had an unbelievable season. I think there's definitely some areas that the team overall needs to improve on. But I think, you know, once Vic got hurt, I think he kind of – Nick kind of took over and, you know, did some really, really good things for him. But Vic's taking it all in stride. I think a lot of people, a lot of non-football people, think that it's time for him to hang up the cleats or that he'll probably won't be be a starting quarterback in the league anymore. But I beg to differ. I think he still has still have a couple seasons in him. He's still very fast. He still has, you know, great arm strength.
Yeah, definitely.
For me, it's the health thing. And, you know, I think particularly the past two seasons in Philly, you know, he's taken a lot of hits. And so I think if you put him in the right system that gives him time, you know, to make the right throws so he doesn't have to run as much because he's older. Now, the young Vic, he enjoyed running. I mean, he would tuck in and run. I don't want to see him take as many hits as he's been taking the past couple seasons. But I still think he'll be a starting quarterback for some team next season.
We will definitely see. Corey, before I get you out of here, you know, an ongoing conversation that we've constantly had on this show is the issue of the new way that the game is being called, specifically in the NFL, when you talk about helmet-to-helmet contact. Now, there are many players out there that have voiced their opinion on Twitter and other social networks, and some even in the media, saying that they feel as though the way the game is being called is hurting the game because it's being called too strenuously. What are your thoughts on the way the game is being called today? Is it going overboard, if you will?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it is going overboard, but I do think it's affecting the play of the game. But I understand why. When you talk about an era of, you know, players, you know, getting hurt and concussions and things like that, particularly you see the lawsuit was just rejected yesterday.
Yeah.
I think it was
$765
million. That even not being enough for, you know, former players and stuff like that. So I think the league is trying to protect itself. It's a physical game. But for me, I think the way that it's being called, it enables the offense. It gives the offense the advantage because as a defensive player, I wanted to strike fear in opposing offenses, just let them know if you're going to catch the ball or we're going to try to punish you. And particularly, you know, playing in the defensive backfield, safety, free safety and stuff like that, you're supposed to be headhunters. So now, you know, the way the game is called, I mean, it's almost like powder puff. You know, they have to
– like flag football, baby.
Right. I mean, you hit a guy, you know, from, you know, with lead in with your helmet and stuff like that. But I understand it's to protect the defensive player as well, but I think it really gives the offense the advantage. But I can understand it. Don't necessarily have to agree with it, but I can understand why it's being called that way.
Corey, you being a defensive guy, I mean, so your mindset when you took, you know, when you laced up the cleats, put on that helmet out there on the field, you were looking to strike pain in whoever you were hitting.
Definitely.
Right?
It was, I mean, it's a physical game. I was looking to punish my opponent.
Wow. Corey Moore. Corey, we got to have you on very, very soon as time goes on. But thanks so much. Corey Moore, former Virginia Tech football standout, also went to play professionally. He now works right here at Michigan State University as an academic advisor. Corey, thanks so much for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
No problem. All right, folks. Well, let's transition now into our third part of the show. And I tell you what, guys, Matt and Alex are still joining me here now. And the talk of the town has been this Jim Caldwell higher. And there are many, many mixed emotions about it. And, you know, again, if you want to call in and weigh in on your thoughts about it, give us a call, 517-355-9527, or you can tweet me at AlMartinWKAR.org or go to Facebook.com/currentsports. Now that I guess a little more than 24 hours have gone by that Jim has been hired, any different thoughts on the hire, guys?
For me, it just seems like a downfall, like a spiral. The more that people are soaking it in for the last few days, the more negativity that's coming out. For me, that's what I've seen. I've just seen more negativity than ever.
Any no positive remarks you've seen? Any of your friends or anybody like that?
I've seen that. Okay, well, he did a great job with a couple quarterbacks. He took some of them from nothing and made them okay. It was the best hire out of the consolation prize, is what I've heard.
So. Mm-hmm. Right, Matt. Same thoughts. I'm sticking to your guns, baby.
I'm going to stick to my guns. you know, if you look at the successes he had, and, I mean, Peyton Manning, we could coach Peyton Manning.
Exactly. I could. Yeah, I'm probably coaching him right now.
You know, and we could win Coach of the Year or something. You know, like, it's the guy, he did the job for him. And Joe Flacco, you can say that, yeah, they improved when he got in there. But, I mean, Joe Flacco threw 11 touchdowns and zero interceptions in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to win games if you don't turn it over.
Right.
And that's what they did last year. I don't think it was because, you know, the offense was revamped and, you know, they did a bunch of things, but I don't know. And then I heard today that the Vikings just hired Mike Zimmer,
Bengals defensive coordinator. I thought about you as soon as I saw
my
that
guy
that's your
going
guy.
In.
Yeah.
And so it'll be fun to watch the Vikings get better and the Lions just kind of tread water. So there you go.
Hey, that's a very honest statement right there, man. But yeah, when Zimmer was hired, it flashed up when I was getting ready for the show. I'm like, hey, that's Matt's guy right there, and he's taken right then and there. But yeah, you know, a lot of that, the decision that I'm hearing, you know, I'm looking at the Lansing State Journal today. And the former Colts coach, of course, Tony Dungy, it seems as though this decision to hire Jim Caldwell had a lot of weight on the fact that Tony Dungy vowed for him. And that was kind of the selling point. That's what I'm reading. This is Corey Hilliard. This is from Dave Burkett, excuse me, who wrote this article. So pretty interesting stuff. But yeah, I'm sticking to my guns, too. I mean, I'm not impressed about the hire. Like you said, his track record is not – nothing really stands out, especially looking at the year the Ravens just had offensively. I really don't see – but we'll see. I mean, only time will tell. A lot of question marks out there. I have to be convinced a little more. So we'll see, though. Also, guys, you know, something else as a hybrid to the whole Barbershop Wednesday topic, and it's something that we've kind of alluded to in the past few weeks here on the show – and you know, and Corey just kind of alluded to it. And by the way, Corey, great interview. That was good stuff, man. He was one outstanding football player at Virginia Tech, and now he's comes full circle now where he's here at Michigan State. But you know, something I want to bring up, guys, is when you look at, of course, the concussion settlement, which was denied today, by the judge. But in the concussions in the NFL, the way sports are being called today, it really begs to ask the question. If sports are becoming too soft or not. And that's what I really want to dive in really quick, guys, because if you look at it, for me, this is my personal opinion, the NFL, in the way the game is being called today, and in my opinion, it's going a little overboard because there are some plays where players are being fined ungodly amounts of money for plays and hits that are simply, in my opinion, unavoidable. I mean, high-speed reaction plays that they can really do anything about. The NFL and its decision to really harp on these plays and to really, you know, put the gavel down and say, hey, we're not accepting no gray area here. If it goes helmet to helmet, we're going to fine you and possibly even, you know, a suspension or something like that. The NFL is protecting this investment when you look at it here. The NFL... When you look at the documentaries that are coming out and the accounts of former players, you know, the whole League of Denial special that aired on PBS, when you look at that and you look at how the NFL and that story of how the NFL tried to cover up, if you will, or deny its knowledge of the effect that long-term down the line concussions could have on an individual or former player, they are in panic mode right now. And they're going to do anything and everything in their power to make it look as though the perception, give off the perception that they're really harping on this thing 100%. Now, I'll go to a different sport here. My sport, my favorite sport, basketball. The way basketball is being called right now is just simply ridiculous. Simply when I look at the NBA, also, you know, with the new handshaking rule in the NCAA, right now, if you look at the NBA and some of the fouls that are called, fouls that are being ruled as flagrant ones or flagrant twos, if you were to rewind the clock back to the 80s, even the 90s here, those would just be fouls back then. You know what I mean? It's so ridiculous sometimes where I see a guy, you know, making a play. It may look really ugly from the standpoint that, hey, I mean, you know, a guy may be coming to the paint and he gets knocked down. That used to happen to Michael Jordan, you know, playing the Bad Boys all the time. You know what it was? It was ruled a foul. Jordan go shoot two free throws. Nowadays, it's being called a flagrant one or two, and sometimes I've seen players ejected for it. I hate it. And really, when you harp on this, I'm looking at it this standpoint. I've read a lot of articles on this that sports nowadays are looking for more offense, and they feel as though more offense will lead to higher ratings. I feel the totally exact opposite of that. I feel as though seeing, you know, the physical play from different players in any kind of sport, I love that kind of stuff. I love the gritty back and forth, elbows in the face. It adds to the essence of competitiveness in the game, in sports in general. And to see that as a fan, I love the stuff.
All right, Al.
It's
right,
dueling
Al.
Down. I don't First know. I have to get off my chest. Right, go ahead.
2 points. The flagrant part, the flagrant foul. I agree. I don't know what you're talking about. This isn't football. You can't have people
Alex.
Tackling people in the air going up for – you have to protect
say,
them.
I didn't say tackling. I've seen some plays where a guy is just making a play on the ball, maybe a swipe across, you know, the front of his body. He may hit the ground hard. It happened the other day. I think there was the Warriors, and I forget who the Warriors are playing, but it happened the other day when they called a flagrant run. The guy almost gets kicked out of the game for it. That is ridiculous to me. It's taken away the physicality of the game, and it's a turnoff as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there are certain cases, but I don't think that you should limit back flagrant foul. I'm glad they're protecting. It's just like security here in the United States. At least they're protecting you. Yeah, it's annoying to be searched. Yeah, it's annoying that... Sometimes
they can protect you by calling the regular foul going to the line and shooting free throws.
The most innocent people don't need to be searched, but it's the same thing with at least they're calling the flagrant even though it's a little bit loose.
It doesn't warrant a flagrant foul, Alex.
How bad would it be if they got rid of the physicality of it, they didn't call flagrants as much, and then some freak accident happens where a player gets hurt because...
You're reaching here.
All right.
I'm not reaching.
Here's the argument.
And really quickly,
you call the flagrants... because you want to keep the game in check. Take you back right. to the malice at the palace. If you let those go and teams start getting chippy, you're going to have another massive PR disaster.
This is
all stemming from that.
The malice at the palace was a totally different situation. You had
How is it different? How did it start? It started with a scuffle on the court between the players.
Yeah, but the foul that was called, I mean, when you
was
look
a
at
tough
that,
foul.
You,
and he should have been
and it should not have been thrown out. Period. Really quick, you see, this game, we got a guest right now.
That's the genesis of
here,
man.
Maybe because I grew up in the D, and, you know, we get hard fouls all the time, okay?
Exactly.
I grew up,
you
had to earn your respect on the court. All right, guys. All right, well, yeah, let's get to our last guest for today's show. I tell you what, there's been talk left and right in the NFL. Of course, we're right in the heat of the NFL playoffs. And he is a man, I tell you what, it knows his stuff when it comes to NFL. He's NFL columnist for USA Today Sports and contributor to ESPN. Jarrett Bell, how you doing, Jarrett? Thanks so much for joining me.
What's up, my Spartan?
My man. All right, let's dive right into it. We only got, 8 minutes here, Jarrett.
Okay.
Let's keep it local here. The Jim Caldwell hiring, is it a good hire for the Detroit Lions?
Well, time will tell, obviously, but I don't think it's a bad hire. And when you're talking about a quarterback like Matthew Stafford who has mechanical issues, consistency issues, Jim Caldwell is the best coach for Matthew Stafford. Now we'll see whether or not he's the best coach for the team overall. And I think if you compare him to Jim Schwartz, I think you're talking about a guy who carries himself in a totally different manner than Jim Schwartz. And you know how they often say that a team will reflect its coach. And I don't know if that's just hyperbole or just, you know, fact, okay?
Right, right.
But if it's true, then the Lions will be a more disciplined team with Jim Caldwell. But then, last point to make, that Ravens offense was nothing to write home about.
That's what I wanted to bring up. Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at the Ravens offense, I mean, if you look at Joe Flacco, Jared, he threw more interceptions than he did touchdowns.
Yeah, no, it's a wild time to get a job, right?
Right.
you know, Jay Gruden gets hired by the Redskins, right, after bombing in the playoffs for a third year in a row with his quarterback and his offense, and then Jim Caldwell gets a job after the Ravens' offense just goes into the tank. Now, part of that, there are a lot of reasons for that. I've seen a lot of the Ravens, and you mentioned Joe Flacco and the interceptions. And, yeah, that's on Joe in a sense, but he did not have the protection he had before, and his running game was abysmal, okay? So there were some contributing factors to that, but still at all, most picks he's ever thrown in his career, and it was under Jim Caldwell's watch. But still at all, you go back to last year and look at what Jim Caldwell did with that Ravens offense down the stretch for a half season. They won the Super Bowl.
Right, right. Now, you know, Jerry, I got to ask you, what's the overall perception as a person as far as his coaching method is concerned? Because I'm looking at Tony Dungy's remarks about Jim Caldwell. I mean, he's a no-nonsense type of guy, and he gets the job done. Is that something you've heard throughout the NFL about Jim Caldwell?
Yeah, well, I've known him for a while. And, you know, he also coached at Wake Forest and didn't put up great numbers when he was a head coach there for several years before he was with the Colts. He has a lot of respect, and I remember very vividly talking to Peyton Manning about him years ago, and Peyton loved him, right? I mean, he just thought that this guy – he just thought that this guy really did a great job helping him with the mechanics, and that's why I say what I say about him being a great coach for Matthew Stafford. From my perspective, I mean, he's a real classy guy, friendly, approachable, all of that, very likable. So, you know, so yes, I like him. And I remember going to visit with him, like, after they won the Super Bowl, going into the coach's quarters and talking to him for a few minutes after the game. And I don't know, it was probably about four or five players that came in there and just really wanted to bond with him for another minute or two in that special moment. Matt Burke came in there, Anquan Boldin, and that just kind of told me something about the respect that he got from his players. Now, from a media standpoint, I'm not a big Jim Caldwell guy. he does not give you good quotes, right?
He doesn't,
so we need to work on that. But he is, he's always approachable. You get a lot of cliches from him. So maybe you'll have better luck with him now that he's in your neighborhood, man.
There we go. Jared, before I let you go, I want to talk, sticking with Peyton Manning here, how big is this weekend's game for Peyton Manning, a man that gets criticized a lot about not showing up in the playoffs when it really matters? Is this a must-win for him to shake off that perception?
All of the above.
Yeah, there you go.
It's like the legacy ball, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not always all on Peyton. It really isn't. And you can say that about any quarterback, but it always kind of starts and ends with him just because he's so much bigger than the game. And it could come down to him. I mean, it could also be determined by the running game for either team. You remember when they played in November, Denver rushed for, like, you know, Knowshon Moreno had over 200 yards against the Patriots, and then we saw Blount last week rip up the Colts. So the running games could, and the defenses against those running games could really be the determining factor.
Right.
Or if it could come down to Brady. You know, a lot of things can happen. But I tell you what, if it comes down to Peyton Manning and he makes a big mistake at the critical time, we will not hear the end of it.
You ain't lying, brother. Yeah. I'd say that'd be my headliner for Monday.
So if they lose, like if the defense blows it like they did last year against Baltimore, then, yeah, I think people will take that into account. But, yeah, it's always – on him somewhere in that whole storyline. You know, one thing I saw real quick last weekend against San Diego, when the game was on the line, John Fox and the Denver offensive coordinator, they put the game on Peyton's arm, and they won the game. Whereas if you remember that loss to Baltimore, they still had time in regulation before it went to overtime. And you paid all this money to get Peyton Manning, and then you run the clock out and go to overtime. So I think, you know, it's obvious that John Fox learned from that. When you are in the moment for the money, do or die or go home, You got to ride with your guy. And so we'll see if that happens again this weekend. But, hey, a lot of drama, and looking forward to it.
A lot of drama. Real quick, Pats, Broncos, 49ers, Seahawks. Who you got going to the Super Bowl, Jared? Real quick.
I'm going to stick with my preseason picks of San Francisco and Denver. I think Peyton Manning will get it done. Otherwise, I'm going to talk about him.
There you go. There you have it. Jared Bell, thanks so much, brother. NFL columnist for USA Today Sports and also a contributor for ESPN. Thanks a lot, Jared.
Okay, I'll take care.
You too. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Be a part of tonight's live studio audience as I sit down with former MSU lineman Robert Viney tonight at 6 p.m. Played along Bubba Smith, such an inspirational guy. 6 p.m. tonight, sign up on WKAR.org for totally free, all right? As always, take care, have one fantastic hump day, and be easy, people.